Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
And today, guys, this will be part two of our interview with Josh Zaglowski. He is a commercial real estate investor who kind of takes a creative approach, a little different from a lot of other people. And this is some of his strategies we haven't talked about on the show. So we wanted to get him on. Him and Jeff has been longtime friends. If you haven't listened to the last episode, go back and listen to that. But where Jeff left off is he was trying to find out where Josh finds kind of per square foot pricing for different tenants that he could bring in. I think, is that what your question was?
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about what type of tenants how do you find those people? So maybe we could just touch on that, and then I want to move on to a couple of other examples. But so Josh, when you're looking for tenants, where do you go? Is there some place where you had mentioned that you have some way of looking at who has shown interest in that area over the last few months? Is that something that you can share? Is that like proprietary where, that's kind of like your secret sauce?
It's not a secret sauce, but it's a higher priced subscription called Realty Lease Track is the actual place, and you pay a yearly fee for it. But not only that, is you can also do or have someone, a commercial broker that you work with, look up and see, you know, who's the top leasing agents in, you know, in a 25 to 100 mile radius. And then you can call them and interview them and have a leasing agent kind of do some of your work for you too. It's not just,
so they could probably tell you who's looking, who's showing some interest, and what kind of prices that they would be, you know, looking to pay for specific square footage, right?
Yeah. I mean, you get someone that's really good, and they might have a contract with Culver's, you know. I was just talking to the person that kind of represents Culver's and bringing them to different areas across Utah.
Culver's like the fast food place?
Yeah. Oh, okay. That has like the frozen custard and stuff. Yeah. They've been popping around Utah quite a bit, you know. So they're kind of, you know, they probably had a plan 10 years ago as a company and said, hey, we're going to wait to come to Utah till we're ready, you know. And so sometimes you'll start talking to tenants, or I'm sorry, leasing agents that says, oh, I represent this tenant, but I also have another one in my back pocket, you know, if that one doesn't work out, you know. So they obviously want you to ink on the line to say, you know, if they find those people, they want to get a commission for it, you know. So you can have different channels of help, you know, throughout your process.
So I don't want to go too deep. I mean, like I said on the last episode, I could sit here and talk to you for 3 hours about the development process, and but I don't want to dive too deep into the development. It's a little bit more complicated and a little more in depth. I shouldn't say complicated. There's more to it that you need to understand. And so one of the things that we talked about during our break is that I had mentioned something about, hey, this is how you get wealthy. And yeah, you wanted to talk about that just briefly in terms of, this is the reason why both of us are working in the commercial realm right now, is that you can make, I mean, life-changing money on one deal. You want to say something toward that?
Yeah, like, my mentor says, one deal, one time can change your life forever. And that's like one of the best slogans out there, especially in commercial, is I've done huge residential deals. You know, I've made $250,000 on a deal in Nevada, you know, $200,000 deal on a deal in Park City, Utah. You know, those deals didn't change my life, you know. And I'm not at a point yet that I've been changing my life, but I shouldn't say that. Where my goal is, I guess I continue to get better. It's kind of, there's this video that Matthew McConaughey shows about the guy that he wants to be in 10 years. You know, that's kind of me, you know, that I'm always looking forward to being that guy in 10 years. And, but the things I've done in commercial so far outweighs, you know, things that I was trying to do in residential, where one deal in residential won't change. In commercial, it could. I mean, it could be a million, two, three, $4 million deal in your pocket. And I've seen it. I've seen a guy put $1.8 million in his pocket for having a property for not even a year.
Yeah.
And that's money in his pocket. You know, his partner's got something above that, but that's what he put in his pocket. And so that's pretty valuable.
Well, and I think life changing is a lot different to a lot of different people, right? So,
yeah.
You know, 200, 250,000 could be very life changing for a lot of people. And we right now currently have a partner on this deal that he really thinks that we have a storage unit facility under contract that that we should make $700,000 on. And as soon as I see the numbers, I'll tell him if I agree or not. And yeah. I mean, but for a lot of people, that would be seriously life-changing money.
That would be life-changing money for me.
All right, so let's talk about another example, and preferably not a development. Not that I'm not seriously interested in it, but I want to make sure our listeners can get, you know, understand some of your strategies, because they're really quite brilliant, and they're very kind of, they're almost like discrete. You're not playing around with numbers necessarily. You're playing around with things that allow you to put pieces in place without any of the risk of actually raising money and putting, you know, purchasing the property before you're ready to.
Right. Yeah. And I think what brought some to my attention that I didn't think about, I probably should say the very first too, is I didn't get into commercial because I always thought you had to have tons of money. I thought you had to have thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get involved. You know, because the guys I saw, you know, years ago buying commercial properties, they had a lot of money, you know, on whatever they were doing. But it's not like that. It's just like what you do in residential. You can buy a house with no money in your pocket. I started with Jeff Rappaport with barely any money in my pocket. You know, me and my partner Jeff at the time always joked around because we were literally we would go to the gas station on Saturday, drive around all day to knock on doors with quarters and dimes and nickels just to fill up the gas tank, you know, and that's a true story. Same thing with commercial. If you do it right and you have the right knowledge in creative financing, you don't need to have money into the deal. You know, you need to find and know and have the education to know how to negotiate the deal with limited partners, with investors, with the bank, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so I think that's very important.
And I think it's like anything else that when you get started and you don't know exactly what you're doing, what do? You partner with someone.
For sure.
You get paid a fee or you get paid a percentage of the deal. Uh-huh. And just like you were mentioning earlier, you'd rather get a piece of a bunch of deals than, you know, 100% of one deal. And just getting started, I mean, in commercial, you can make a significant amount of money for a small percentage or a quick fee. And that experience will help you start moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, I know that we're probably going to go on to one of my deals, but like if someone referred me a deal that we end up profiting as a group, 1 million or 1.5 million on the deal, and you're a 5% owner, you're getting 5% of our monthlies every month, you know, or monthlies of that property, then you're getting 5% of $1.5 million gain. I don't know the numbers, 75,000 or something. that's a good payday for being
not bad,
a,
right?
You know, so no risk, yeah. Or no you can money. Not do it, or you can not do it and make 100% of zero.
That's right.
You know.
Yep. All right. Yeah, let's talk about another example.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that. So one of your creative strategies is to kind of build in a long due diligence period so that you can go out there and change the zoning and shop for a buyer or a tenant. So what else, what other creative strategies are you using right now?
Well, there's a few. I think one of the things that to kind of get in an easier type of deal, what they call value add type of deal is in the residential piece, if you're a flipper, you know, you're buying a property at $120,000, let's say, and it's a fixer upper. We use that term in residential, fixer upper, right? Yeah. But in reality, what we're doing is we're adding value to sell it as an increased price for, let's say, $180,000, right? Commercial, there's a thing called value add. You know, we don't use that too much in residential, but it's the same type of thing. You're mm-hmm. adding value. And so when I bought one of my first centers in Indianapolis, we brought it for $2 million on the dot, and we had two vacancies. We've since added those vacancies, which right before COVID, our valuation was about $3.6 million. And so if we decide to put on the market, which we can put on the market on a light type of market and just reach out to some brokers and say, hey, do you have any buyers that are interested in this type of deal? We're not going to list it, but just want to see any type of off-market options out there. And if we were able to sell it for $3.6 million, we added value and profited $1.6 million. So if an investor is part of my deal that owns 10% of that property, they're going to make their investment returned plus 10% of the gain of $1.6 million. You know, and that's just a basic kind of value add, no really strategy in place outside of, you know, putting money down. There's a due diligence period. So if I put earnest money deposit down, let's say $5,000, and I have a 60-day due diligence, I have 60 days to decide if I want to move forward. Well, anytime we go into a due diligence period, we're doing a lot of work, you know, nonstop to make sure we are 100% comfortable about taking this to long term. Or if we have to go back to the seller and do some sort of strategy, that we can easily do that.
What's the usual length of due diligence that you're trying to get, Josh?
Right now, between 60 to 90 days minimum.
Okay.
Granted, I think I said in a previous podcast that, you know, I'll make 20 to 30 offers. I'd say sometimes half of those will, they'll reply and they'll counter me with a lower due diligence. They'll want 30 days. And I'm just like, you know what? I know some other sellers will give me a longer due diligence, you know? Yeah. And my whole point of the due diligence, the long-term due diligence, is to get things in place. For instance, if there's two vacancies in a property, I want to see what other tenants are saying that I can reach out to. It says, hey, what do you think about this spot over here? If we take this on, would you put in an LOI? You know, and they'll take a couple of weeks to let you know, and then you'll have a good indication like, hey, we're really interested. They might have not made the LOI, but you know you have interest, at least from one. You're going to get that from others, you know. And so to answer your question, Jeff, is, yeah, about 60, 90 days is the minimum of what I will ask for.
How are you negotiating, like, your longer term? So when, you know, I know that you've had some that are 6 months, maybe even a year, up to a year. I don't know if there's any that are longer than that, but what's that conversation like with the seller, and how are you explaining why you need that long of a period of time?
So yeah, I'm pertaining the negotiation to the property. You know, if I tell them like, hey, right now this is, we talked about this in the previous one, if this is zoned residential, I need to get this commercial. So I don't know how long it's going to take, you know? And so I need to kind of do my own due diligence to figure that out. If it's a development deal, usually you can get those 6 to 12 months. There's a property I picked up with a lady that, the property's been in her family for years. It used to be a meat packing plant in the 20s, 1920s, not 2020s. And I basically said to her, hey, you know, I need 5 months due diligence to not only talk to the city, to do some tests. I gotta, you know, get quotes on ripping down the building, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, she was fine with it. It's just funny that it really comes down to the same thing with residential, is it's motivation. Yeah. Are they motivated to sell? She was extremely motivated because she's paying $3,500 a year in taxes for the last 10 years. No one's even been in this building since like 1975.
Oh, wow.
So she's losing money. You know, yep. She's paying $3,000 times. I mean, she didn't pay $3,000 for taxes in 1975, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Paid a big chunk of money. And so she was extremely motivated and we got a really good deal from it.
Yeah.
Well, and it probably helps that you explain what you're doing to them, you know?
Oh yeah.
So they have an idea and, you know, I'm sure they know that, you know, it's probably a long process to do zoning change. And so you're going to need some time, but that's where the real value is. And if you can't do that, then there's no deal.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not trying. Yeah. That's a good point. Cause we are explaining it quite a bit to them on what our plan is. You know, and that's why they're going to accept the due diligence period. Sometimes if it's a bigger property that, you know, has tons and tons of acreage, that there's a lot of opportunity, but there's a lot of work. Sometimes I'll go to the seller and say, hey, do you just want to partner on this deal and donate your land to the partnership? I don't want to go pay $5 million for something I don't know is going to work.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. So do you ever, Josh, do you ever, to get that longer due diligence period, do you ever offer the seller like the, like first right of refusal? So like you'll keep it under contract. You have 6 months of due diligence, but if they were to receive another offer, you would have to, you know, make a commitment or be out. Do you ever do anything like that?
So two different ways I've done that, the way you explained it. Number one is I've gone to the seller and I've said, hey, let's make this a 6 month due diligence. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the first right to either be paid off or to donate the land to the partnership. So in other words, let's say we value the land or the property, even with a building on it, for $1 million. Okay. So I then tell them like, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to create the contract where in 6 months you have an option to either be part of our partnership, because we're going to go out there and find options for tenants. And if it doesn't work, we back out, but we don't obviously tell them that. We tell them the two options and we tell them like, hey, if it doesn't work, we will back out. Yep. They also know kind of where they're at with their own property too. But if we have a tenant, let's say it's a Jiffy Lube, you know, let's say it's just a little spot. So we say, hey, we got a Jiffy Lube that wants to, you know, do a 15-year lease. Here's what the numbers look like. If you donated your $1 million to land to the partnership, you're going to get X percent ownership. Let's say it's 40% ownership and then we're 60%. Well, you know, I didn't pay $1 million for that property. I did have to pay 100% of the build, but that's part of our partnership, right? It shows what I expended, put it out as expense. Or if you don't want to be part of our deal on the Jiffy Lube, we'll then cash you out for the $1 million in the 6 months. Because obviously I'm in it one way or another. I'm just wondering if they're in or not. Right.
I get it.
So that's one way. Another way we've presented it that way to a seller, and we've had a couple say, you know what? Well, if we find someone during that 6 month due diligence, we want 60 days from the time we give you notice for you to either make that decision. Either you have to cash it out or we'll donate the money to land, but we can't give you 6 months just to shop our property.
Okay.
You know, so we understand that, you know, yep. And we just do whatever we present obviously the negotiation just like any creative financer would, and then you kind of, you know, work around it based on you know, what you hear from them. You know, the one thing that you told me in that first class we went to 17 years ago, Jeff, was there's two words that if you become really good at is the secret to real estate. And I remember having my pen and paper ready and you said, it's two words. If you become a good problem solver, you'll become really good at real estate.
I was just thinking, what were those two words?
I've brought up a lot of old stuff for you this last couple of weeks.
I thought you were going to say deal finder.
Yeah. So you said if you become a good problem solver, and that's really it, because now I have a different option in front of me. I got to problem solve to figure out what's best for us.
Yeah.
You know, so, or the property.
Yep.
So,
all right. So I want to switch gears just as we wrap this episode up. So you've adapted based on what's going on with COVID-19 and the uncertainty in some of the market. You've now kind of switched from where your emphasis has been for the last several years to a more wholesale model, dealing with actually, for the most part, different asset classes, right? I mean, you were dealing more warehouse and office and retail, and now you're dealing more in apartment storage and, you know, whatever else. What do you think has been the biggest change for you in, you know, going from something where you were looking to own it to now where you want to potentially wholesale it?
Mostly, we go with the market, but not only that is you, as a real estate investor, no matter where you're at, you always try to find the low hanging fruit. Where is something easy that you can have the ability to put under contract that's a really good deal for someone else? You know, it might not be something I hold, which is fine, but yep, there's other people that's all they want to hold. You know, that's all they want, and that's what they're looking for. And it'd be great to have a wholesaler show them a good deal, and they can run the numbers and determine if it's something they want to buy. And so when by a fluke, I wholesaled a multifamily last November and made a good six-figure income from it.
Yeah.
And it didn't take me that much time to make that happen.
Yeah.
Shortly after, I did two other deals in January that were really good as well. And I thought, you know what, I need to learn more about this, because what I've been doing has just been on the side, and it ended up making some good money. I want to start running a little side bucket. You know, you want different, I think Robert Kiyosaki is the one who said, you want multiple streams of income.
Yep.
You know, real estate, you can have multiple streams of income within real estate.
Yep.
You know, not just a real estate income. You know, and people that aren't in real estate sometimes don't get that. They think it's just one or two incomes that you can get from real estate. There's several you can get. There's 20.
Yeah.
You and I were talking about a new one last week that we've always been told about, and with notes. And so I just was kind of like, you know what? I need to learn more about this. I need to do some more marketing to people, reach out to brokers, try to get off market deals, you know, maybe send out some mail marketing, whatever it is, to put in a contract, then to show a big buyer's list, because like I said, I think in the last one, you know, of all the asset classes in commercial, there's the most buyers in apartments. So that's your low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have a lot of buyers in that space. So figure out a way to find those properties that are good enough for them to buy. Sometimes you have to reverse wholesale. You have to reach out to 10 to 20 buyers and say, what are you looking for? And where are you looking at? Because that's where I'll go look.
I assume that even though you're still trying to get a little bit of an extended due diligence and extended closing time frame, that you're probably a little more flexible on the wholesale kind of side as opposed to, you know, looking to buy it for yourself.
Right. Yep.
So yeah, on the last apartment deals that you wholesaled, how did you find them and how did you sell them?
So I found them because the seller, which would end up being one seller on the two I did in January, he reached out and says, hey, would you be interested in buying my apartments? And, you know, my first thought was like, well, no, cause I don't hold those, but I'm like, someone else wants them, you know? And that's why I reached out to probably about 10 people on a blind carbon copy email. And I had 2-3 offers within a few days.
And you structured creative terms on that too, didn't you, Josh?
Yeah, on one of them, the seller was willing to do a seller finance deal. The other one, he wanted to be cashed out because he wanted to buy a cabin for his family. So
yep.
I basically told, it's actually the same buyer that bought both of them. And I just basically told him, hey, one, you have an option to get a seller finance deal, or and the other one, you got to cash out. That's so I think
what you still do creative financing like we do, like what we talk about on the podcast. You structure terms and you're a little creative in terms of how you're trying to set the deal up to give you enough time, which is, it's really funny because I do the same thing, but I do it mostly on single family homes where I tell them, hey, I'm looking for an owner occupant. So I need 30 days or I need 45 days so I can go find that owner occupant. And if they come back to me and they say, well, we want you to be the buyer, then I say, okay, then I'm going to need a little better, we're going to need some better terms than we've already talked about, but it's your choice. You know, we'll go find them at our expense, at our time, or, hey, we'll be the buyer, but we're going to need a little better deal.
Yeah. And you and I had a conversation a few days ago on the commercial side. I think people should know too, is sellers in commercial are, they pretty much know this, some of these creative strategies, and they're open to it. It's sometimes it's hard to talk to a residential person about a strategy, you know, because they're like, wait, no, I'm used to the black or white. You either pay for it or you don't.
Right.
There's no gray.
Yeah.
You know, commercial people are much open to that gray area. Plus, you know, there's seller financing, which you can get a lot of seller financing in commercial. There's also, if there's a commercial loan on the property, I would say, I don't know the percentage, maybe 70 to 80% of them are assumable.
Yep.
You can actually assume the mortgage.
Yep.
You know, so there's a lot of different strategies with that. It's just knowing that. And when I started seeing, wait, this is the stuff I've been doing residential, it's just a little easier on commercial, I was like, wow, I've already been doing this with residential on creative stuff. Now it's just implementing that same stuff in something that's a little easier, you know?
Less emotional attachment as well, right?
Yes.
Same thing Jeff's doing with finding the tenant buyer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. I think commercial is, and then I'm seeing the opportunities already. I mean, we have 4 deals under contract right now with at least 4 more that we will potentially have next week. So it's, and they range from mobile home parks, RV parks, storage units, apartments, all over the country. And it's not like we went and dug through, you know, pulling lists and then skip tracing and calling. I mean, that these are properties that we've created some relationships with brokers and they've just brought them to us.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Great. Well, let's wrap this up. And
So real quick, Josh, for those who want to, you know, move from residential into commercial, how does one get started? If you haven't done any commercial deals and you've done, you know, you've done some stuff on the residential end, how do you jump in?
Well, one thing I'd say, easiest way is kind of like, you know, we have Zoom calls every week. We have a Facebook page named, it's Utah CRE, stands for Commercial Real Estate. Utah CRE Investors is our Facebook page. Ask to be part of the Facebook page, stay with us. What you'll find out is kind of like what I said in the last podcast. You know, John Rockefeller said, I'd rather make 1% on the 100 people than 100% on myself. So I'm always open to helping people and individuals, groups, because to be honest, it helps me too. You know, and sometimes you learn more as the teacher. But not only that is, you know, it's something that I'm always looking for more partners and people to do real estate with, you know, and, for this is a long-term play for me. It's not short-term. So I don't want to just do one deal with someone. I want to do multiple. So okay. There's that. I guess like my Instagram plug is JTZIEG. Instagram. I don't know. I can give you my phone number too. It's 801-668-2000. If you want to text or give me a call, by all means, you know, and then you also have, you know, Jonathan and Jeff's information to get a hold of me. So I appreciate you guys allowing me to come on and share my passion.
Yeah, well, thank you.
I'm part of your Facebook group, and I can tell you that there's some big players, there's some brand new people, and there's people in between. There's something for everyone. And, you know, you just started it a few months ago and it's growing, and as it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad I did it. Sometimes, you know, you just get going with what you're doing, and it's helped a lot of people. And I want to see people within the group invest with each other or partner with each other. It doesn't need to be with me, you know, and I love hearing those stories.
Yep.
So. That's cool. So that was just Utah CRE?
Utah CRE Investors. Yep.
Investors. Cool. All right. Any last words, Jeff?
The reason that I wanted to have Josh on is that creative financing, and we could have talked about how Josh structures creative financing with numbers, but you hear that a lot. I mean, that's what we do on this show. And what I really wanted to get across is that, one, he is in an area of real estate that I absolutely see the opportunities right now. And it is really no more difficult learning. There's some differences, but it's not much more difficult to learn commercial as opposed to residential, and can be life changing in terms of a deal. And when I say that, like one deal, and as opposed to houses are great. I still do houses. I will always do single family homes, but commercial is there's big opportunity right now and will continue to be. So I wanted Josh he has a little different take on things and perspective. And I think that it's always about trying to think outside the box. How do I make something work as opposed to, well, I can't make this work. It's about that problem solving. It's about the puzzle and making all the pieces fit. And I've got to learn how to get longer due diligence times because I usually give in on that pretty quickly. And he's right. Most of them want quick. And I basically trade that off with, okay, you want quick. I want a better price. I want better terms. So always interesting to hear different perspectives. And that's what I'm hoping our listeners get out of these last two episodes.
Awesome. Well, yeah, some of my key takeaways were going for the longer due diligence and then shopping for a tenant buyer. And then like the way you partnership, you kind of do a general partner with the seller or the property owner, where you can bring them in as a general partner and they donate their land for a bigger percentage of the company. Or there's an offer of first right of refusal where they can just get cashed out via an option. So I think those are really creative ways, kind of a creative approach that I haven't really heard of before. So that was my takeaways, and I'm glad that Jeff, you were able to get Josh on. And Josh, thank you for taking the time, and hopefully this is useful to all of you guys out there. Maybe gives you a new perspective or maybe a new horizon, maybe a new North Star to look towards.
This podcast is always about trying to make you think, right? Yeah. And some of you might be struggling with single family homes. I can tell you that I have a lot less competition. Do you, Josh? I mean, going after some of these commercial deals than maybe single family. I've rarely been involved in any bidding wars, and
very rare. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that part for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, you can reach us on our hotline, 877-409-8090. If you got questions, comments, if you're looking to join Jeff's apprenticeship program, hit us up there. And then to get special access to a video that Jeff did on step-by-step offer creation, just text CFP or creative financing to that number. Again, 877-409-8090. You can reach us on Facebook at the Creative Financing Podcast, and all of our episodes are on the Creative Financing Podcast.com. Okay, guys, till next time, go out there and create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.